What's up, guys? My name is Dakota, and this is A Place for Humans podcast. Right now, I'm in a little room in the middle of the jungle. I'm sure if I stop talking, you can hear. Let's be quiet for a sec. That's the real-life jungle. Anyways, I'm out here with my family. We're in Costa Rica right now. We're getting ready to go to Envision Festival. Envision invited me out to the festival to do some vlogging and I guess just hanging out, and I thought it'd be funny to bring my mom to a crazy festival like Envision. I don't know if you guys know what Envision is, but it's kind of like this huge psychedelic jungle rave. And yeah, my mom is, she's not much of an adventurer, but I've been bringing her out of her shell a lot since we've been here, and she's come to Costa Rica a lot, and she's been to other places in Central America, and but she's not much of an adventurer. So what did we do? Yesterday we went and visited some of the indigenous people here in Costa Rica called Bribri, and that was really cool. They taught us some of the local plants that you find here in the jungle and like what their uses are, like a plant that cures you from malaria. There's a mosquito flying around me right now, so that could become useful. That's a useful thing that I just learned yesterday. Malaria, all kinds of cool plants that make dyes. Like dye your clothes. I thought that was really interesting. They had this leaf that you could squeeze and it would make orange dye. That was really interesting. What else? They showed us the little thorns they used when they get the poison from the frog to blow at people. That was kind of cool. So yeah, that was a cool experience for my mom. And yeah. What else have we done since we've been here? We're in Puerto Viejo, which is on the Caribbean side, and we've just been relaxing. Just been relaxing straight up. My mom's boyfriend, Tommy, he's like a tall white guy with kind of orange hair, and he just got cornrows yesterday. I talked him into it. I paid for it, and that video will be up eventually on my channel, and it should be really funny. He's a really funny guy, and he helps break my mom out of her shell, too, so I appreciate that. Because you guys know about my stepdad, Jefe, who drove off a cliff, RIP. He didn't die, but I didn't see him after that happened. And I know. He was cheating on my mom, and on the way home, he drove a Jeep off of a hill. And I wanted to play a song to start the podcast off. By a guy that I've looked up to since I was in high school. His name is Ryan Harvey, and he makes kind of this political activist music. He's an activist through his music, through art. And this is one of my favorite songs by him. It's called "Your Poverty Is Our Profit." And I remember when I found this song for some, I don't know how, I was just searching around the internet for songs to quench my anarchist thirst, and somehow came across this EP or this CD called Riot Folk, and this song was on there, and I really appreciate this song, and I just recently reached out to Ryan, and I think I'm gonna have him on the podcast eventually, so that'd be cool. Shout out to Ryan Harvey. This is "Your Poverty Is Our Profits."
Starving, the news came in the north, 11 million. The United Nations sent cash again, too little too late like it's always been. Begging for funding on the BBC, they brought the blame to you and me. Well, the Western government sailed the sea, spending billions on the war machine. You careless people should give a bit that you've earned at work in the years you spent. The myth of the caring government, everyone knows it's bullshit. Like their ancestors, they're out for gold. Their storyline is bought and sold. The new excuse is just a twist of the old. They got Africa in a stranglehold. Exxon's profits are record high as they scan the world for a chunk to buy a new market. A fresh supply of labor and life to colonize. They got more wealth than you'll ever see, but they place the blame on you and me. They've mastered the art of piracy, their posh adventure. Your misery, we sent you food, but you ate it all. And though the portion was awfully small in the public eye, we met the call. And if we send any more, stocks might fall. We got wars to fight, roads to build, toys to make, tribes to kill. We're out for factories, mines, and mills. Don't give a shit if your belly's filled. tensions rise. Just open your wallets and close your eyes. Let economics rule your lives. You'll receive our aid if you privatize your water, your land, your way of life, your minds, your schools, your health, your rights. You pick the fruit, you plant the rice, we'll pull the profit, you'll pay the price. Our national wealth was stolen fair. You plowed our fields, we brought you here. The world, you knew the land, just shared the life we took with no war declared. And we own the planet through bonds and debt. We're out for anything we can get. Africa, you've bled for this. Your poverty is our profit.
That is Ryan Harvey. Oh, I love that song. It's it really makes you think. I will put the lyrics down in the description for you guys. You should read it. Go back, listen to that song again, and read the lyrics along with it. And this song, I mean, it's got to be, I found out about this song, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. So, and it still holds true, and I imagine, well, hopefully it doesn't hold true in the future, but sadly, I imagine it will. And before we get the podcast going, we'll give a shout out to our sponsor, Stay Happy, Stay Weird. That's my clothing company. Shout out to my own clothing company. If you guys would like to support this podcast, you can head over to Stay Happy, Stay Weird and buy a t-shirt. Then it doesn't really seem like you're supporting this podcast, but you are. And I also have a Patreon, patreon.com/DakotaWint. And you get this podcast a day early along with some other cool content that is not appropriate for YouTube, like some of the psychedelic content and stuff. And yeah, stayhappystayweird.com. I have some new t-shirts coming out. I think you guys will really like them. I know some of you guys ask me where I get my shirts, and that's usually where I get them from. And also, shout out to our other sponsor, Summerland. Welcome to summer.land. That's their website, and they make handmade pipes and bongs and other smoking paraphernalia that you can use to connect to your soul and to connect with Earth. Like, they made this little thing right here. These are handmade. This is a chillum. They smoke these chillums in India. They smoke these... Sorry, I'm talking so far away from the mic, you guys. But they smoke these chillums in India like this. I don't have anything to smoke out of it right now, but look how cool this thing is. In India, they go, Bambole, Hara Hara Mahadev, which is a sort of prayer to the god of intoxication, Shiva, the lord of destruction and the lord of darkness. Bum. So, Summerland. Welcome to summer.land. Get yourself a Summerland boy and join the club, because I feel like it's really cool to, like, people always ask me about weed and spirituality. Can marijuana be spiritual? And I think, yeah, of course marijuana can be spiritual. There's a weird relationship we have with plants. Like, if you think about Moses in the Bible smoking, well, they don't say he smoked a burning bush. I think I talked about this on a podcast before, but Moses did not just talk to a bush that came from heaven. He was smoking a bush. That's the only way that thing makes sense. A burning bush that gave him a vision of God? Come on, that dude was getting hella high off cannabis or off some kind of DMT tree they found in that area. I think they call it the acacia. They believe the acacia bush... Or is it a tree? Anyways, I think that there's some DMT-containing plant in that area that potentially Moses could have been using to packing in his Summerland. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like... I mean, it's not even an opinion. Things like mushrooms, DMT, weed, Salvia divinorum, which I've never tried. And I'm going to Mexico in a couple weeks to try that. I'm so scared. Jesus, a lot of people think DMT is the most potent psychedelic. That is, that's not true. Salvia is the most potent psychedelic. It's very potent. And they don't actually smoke it traditionally. The shamans, the curanderos or curanderas that utilize this plant, they don't smoke it, they chew it. They say the plant doesn't like to be smoked, and that's why you have such bad trips when you smoke it. Because they look at these plants as being beings. Sometimes they call them plant teachers. They look at them as being guides because, like, most people have smoked marijuana, so they can relate to the idea that marijuana can cause sort of a calmness that allows you to have realizations about yourself. And it helps you tune in to the moment and it helps you release some of the walls of stress that you've built up. Like my mom, I'm listening to my mom talk this whole trip, and she can't chill. She needs something to be complaining about. She needs something to complain about. You know, she doesn't have anything to complain about, so she just makes stuff up. It's because her comfortability, her life is so in the habit of finding something to complain about that that's just her norm. She just looks for it. That's her comfortable space for her, because that's all she knows, I guess. I don't know. I don't mean that in a bad way, because I'm the same. And I imagine we all have our bad habits like that. We always are constantly taken out of the moment, whether we're chasing our desires, you know, or whether we are just lost in our thoughts. Alan Watts said that, what Alan Watts quote was I just going to say? That one just went straight out of my thoughts. Alan Watts said something good once, I'm sure, about time not being real. But yeah, time's not really real. Time's not really real because, you know, I was thinking about tree time and how, because like there's a tree just outside that is huge. It's not like a redwood, but it is a huge tree that's got to be a few hundred years old, and oh, maybe even 500 years old. And it must just see humanity like blinks of an eye, you know, all these generations coming and going, and seeing just everything change and morph as humanity grows and changes, you know. Especially the redwoods in America, they've seen so much, and not that they can process it or understand it in the same way humans can, but they must be experiencing time in such a different way. Or like a hummingbird, right? Hummingbirds are the really fast ones. I think there was a hummingbird outside today, and it goes so quick that it must experience time in a different way than us, right? Because, or like monkeys, when they can just, well, maybe not monkeys, but something that moves really quick and can maneuver really fast, I feel like it must process time differently than us. Like a fly. They say a fly lives for like a day. I don't know if that's true, but if a fly lives for a day, do you think they feel a lifetime? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But I complain a lot about nothing, and there's nothing to complain about. We are on a, we are in a universe. We are in bodies. I mean, I guess that's a thing to complain about, actually. You know, these bodies are decaying every second, and we are essentially being digested by the universe. The universe is... Duncan Trussell once told me something that terrified me and gave me a panic attack. He said that the universe is a super organism that is slowly just eating and digesting us. There's a quote in the Bhagavad Gita that says something. Krishna says something like, well, okay, so Arjun is a character in this book, the Bhagavad Gita, and Arjun is going to war because his kingdom is being split up, and his cousins and other family want to take his kingdom, and he doesn't want to fight, but he's being forced to fight. And Krishna sort of takes on the guide as his teacher and helps him out through this moment of truth, of impending doom, impending suffering, and helping him get through it, and helping him realize who he is and how to accept that the people he loves is coming to him as for war. You know, he said he looked out. Arjun said, I look out and I see teachers, friends, family, brothers. I don't want to fight them. I don't see enemies. And he begs Krishna to show him his true form, his cosmic form. And Krishna shows Arjun his real self. And who Krishna is just this huge monster with teeth that is just eating the entire universe. He shows Arjun being chewed away in his mouth. And he said, this is who I am. I'm eating you. It doesn't matter if you go to war, if you don't go to war, because I'm eating you right now. I'm eating you. And Duncan said something like that. We are in the digestive tract of a superorganism. The universe is just sucking us to death every second. We are just approaching this impending doom. So it doesn't matter what you do. If you want to complain, complain. You have a reason to complain because you're going to die and everything you love is going to die. I'm having a great time, though, with my family here. What else do I have to talk about with you guys? Something cool about that Bree tribe is they said that they didn't tell me what psychedelic they use because my Spanish isn't very good. And our guide also didn't extract that information for me. But they use a psychedelic to remove spirits. When people are possessed with bad spirits, they do some ritual with the psychedelic, but they don't do any normally, only for that. And they said on very rare occasions. I thought that was interesting. Because I was thinking about DMT. And someone asked me, will you ever do DMT again? And I don't think I will ever do DMT again, actually. No, I mean, I will do DMT in the form of ayahuasca or in the form of, I don't know, something else, but smoking DMT? Oh, God. No. I can't see myself. Okay, so, like, the thing is with mushrooms, even though it's like diving headfirst into water that you can't see, you don't know if you're going down or up or left or right. You're just stuck in this misty, murky depth of confusion, yet familiarity, yet a unity and euphoria mixed with a terrified anxiety. But you can navigate those waters, you know? Whereas DMT is like getting a hit in the face with a baseball while you're in the bleachers on your cell phone. Like, people talk about getting abducted by aliens on DMT, and people are like, yeah, that sounds fun. I would love to do something that feels like I'm getting abducted by aliens. And yeah, it is fun until you are getting abducted by aliens, because it feels like this. Like, I'm hitting myself right now. It feels like that. You are in a body, you are in a place, and you feel things, and it feels real. So when you're getting abducted by aliens, you're getting abducted by aliens, and it's terrifying. I had serpents ripping open my stomach. They were ripping open my stomach and cleaning me out of these negative energy blockages. I don't even know what that means, but... You know, I actually brought a book with me called A Cosmic Serpent that a lot of people recommended to me after hearing my DMT story. And a lot of my trips that I have, this serpent vision is a reoccurring theme for me. So I'm really excited to see maybe what kind of, why these images are popping up, maybe some kind of cultural influence or some sort of just human genetic influence where that's just what our brain does. I don't know. I'm excited to read this book and see what it says. But yeah, I have these rainbow serpents dissecting my stomach on a cosmic operation table in hyperspace, in the psychedelic space of colors and geometry. And yeah, no. After that, it felt like I died and went to heaven. And I don't feel like I need to go through that again. That's like it took me a few days to like calm down after that, because it's such an experience. I guess I would imagine, and I don't mean to offend anybody that's been in a near-death experience, but I feel like that's kind of what it was, and I've never had a near-death experience to compare it to, but that's what it felt like. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe one day I'll do it again, but it doesn't seem to have the same communication that mushrooms has. Like, when I take mushrooms, and this is going to sound crazy. I will sound like a crazy person, and I've said this on my channel before, but I believe in these shamanic traditions that utilize things like mushrooms to communicate with spirits. I think you can invoke the spirit world through the psychedelic experience. And a lot of shamanism has to do with that. And I'm sure you've heard me talk about going to Mexico. I think I talked about it already in this podcast. But I'm going to Mexico in a couple of weeks to work, air quotes, with the Mazatec Indians who take psilocybin mushrooms as a spiritual sacrament, as a way to communicate with the other. This is where Terrence McKenna hung out. This is where Ram Dass found out about the mushrooms, and Gordon Wasson and Timothy Leary. This is the spot that inspired essentially the psychedelic revolution. So I'm excited to reconnect with those roots, being American, and I'm excited to learn about how to get to these occult dimensions, these magical spaces, through these rituals of earth worship and mantra, or what the shamans call Icaros, which is a song that guides you through your trip. And they use different plants for the music, and they use different words. I don't know if it's sometimes in Spanish, or if it's sometimes in like the, maybe their native language, or sometimes it might just be tongues. You know, nothing, meaning nothing, just noises that help guide you. Excuse me. Yeah, that should be really fun. And also in Mexico is where the Mayan runes are, or a lot of Mayan runes like Chichen Itza and Palenque, which I'm going to go to Palenque. Also after we meet with our shaman. And Palenque, you can also take mushrooms there because they just grow everywhere in the jungle. So you just go pick mushrooms and have yourself a nice little trip at the Mayan runes and kind of reconnect with the ancestors. I think, you know, these are, we are looking for magic. Everyone wants to believe in magic. We make movies about it, and we make fairy tales about it and mythologies about it. But to the shaman, or to the sadhu, or to the mystic, or to the sage, this magic is real. It's not a fairy tale. And I feel that the mushroom is a gateway to a magical dimension where there are beings that you can communicate with, but I think you need to invoke them through ceremony. And I've had this experience happen to me personally. Oops, shit, sorry about that. That's loud for you wearing headphones. But I've had this experience happen to me personally. You can look on the internet and find people that have also had this experience. It's weird that there seems to be a voice in the mushroom that speaks to you through your own thoughts. And sometimes it's curious, or sometimes it's demanding. They were doing this in the Bible too, not with mushrooms, but they had a lot of different plants and pharmacological potions, you know, like ayahuasca or something like that, but not ayahuasca because that's a South American thing. But they have similar things, these magical potions that connect you to other things. And this is like what I was talking about, Moses with the burning bush. Like they were not unfamiliar with these spaces, with using the plants to connect to the spirit world. And any nature-based people figured this out. It wasn't hard for them to figure this out. We've been using plants for spiritual methods forever. But the mushroom is an interesting one because we essentially evolved from mushrooms. So that makes an interesting case to why we can communicate with it in such an intimate way. And a lot of people will not have a spiritual experience through mushrooms. Like they'll just be with their friends and the colors will be nice. And, you know, maybe they just don't have the kind of experience that I'm talking about. And I think it just needs to be done properly. And I think you need to be able to allow the experience to happen. I know sometimes, like, a mushroom trip can be really overwhelming. And you'll just be like, I don't want this to happen. You know, I want this to stop. But you can't sometimes. You know, well, you can't make it stop unless you use some kind of other drug to make it stop. but you can't make it stop. And the whole reason of taking it is to allow it to show you what it wants to show you. Traditionally, you know, people do use it for whatever they use it for. But for me, it's such, it has such potential to show you things about yourself that I don't want to use it for any other reason. It feels like a waste of the experience. But you have to invoke it. You have to invoke it. Call out to the mushroom. I know it sounds ridiculous, but you have to invoke the spirit of the mushroom. Meditate. Breathe. Usually have to be alone. I can't get to these spaces when I'm with people because I'm too in my ego if I'm around other people. There's too many subtle communication going on that keeps me from being able to break into the higher levels of these spaces. Unless you're with a shaman who can help guide you there and can help bring you through the ceremony. And I'm hoping to share that with you guys when I'm in Mexico. And I'm hoping to continue a relationship with the Mazatecs and make this a place that I go back to. Because the mushroom is a very special thing to me. And I know that sounds ridiculous. Like it sounds so silly to say out loud. Like a mushroom. It's almost like a cosmic joke. Bill Hicks had a joke that said something about mushrooms growing on cow shit. And he goes, that's why they called it holy shit. That's why they called it holy shit. That's why they call it holy shit. Because holy shit. This holy experience grows out of literal shit. It's a cosmic joke. Ram Dass, my teacher, my spiritual guru, psychedelic guru, he said, when someone asked him, Ram Dass, what has kept you on the spiritual path after all these years? And Ram Dass took a second, and he closed his eyes, and he said, I trusted the mushroom. I trusted the mushroom. And I trusted the mushroom too. And it's brought me to where I'm at. You know, I find it interesting, which I'm really interested in witchcraft and not in like a kind of like spooky, I'm a Wiccan in my Tumblr and Instagram profile, but I'm interested in witchcraft from like an Aleister Crowley occult perspective. And I love looking at shamanism as a form of witchcraft because it is. And like when you think of, what do you think of when you close your eyes and think of a witch? We kind of, if you're born in America, think of a big pointy hat, someone living in a swamp or in a cabin in the woods, and they're brewing a potion full of plants, and maybe they'll throw a frog in there. And then if you go to the Amazon, you see the same thing. You see someone out there living in the forest, brewing a potion with a frog tied up, poking it to get the psychedelic or medicinal property that it excretes. And yeah, they're brewing plants in their cauldron in the jungle. Where do these symbols come from? So that should be fun. And I will take ayahuasca one day because I feel like there's a lot to learn there. And I feel like it's a lot more navigable than straight DMT. And I do recommend everyone trying DMT once if you want. If you want to know that there are different levels of consciousness that you can experience. Because a lot of people seem not to believe that for some reason, even though they shift through levels of consciousness all the time. Dreaming, daydreaming. Drunk, caffeine high, so many different levels of consciousness, but an extreme one, if you want to experience an extreme level of consciousness, smoke DMT. As Terrence McKenna said, DMT requires no belief. And he said, if it doesn't work, do it again. And if it doesn't, you got to hit it. If you hit it twice, if you hit that second hit, hold it in, it will take you to a different dimension. 4D. It seems like a four-dimensional realm. Anyways, I don't know. Do you guys think religion is child abuse? Because I was thinking about how I remember being in the backseat of a car with my dad. And my dad telling me, I don't know my dad too well, but this is one of the memories I have of him, which is a beautiful one. He was telling me that revelations in the Bible was real and that demons were going to raise from the earth and destroy and kill everybody. And the people that were good will go to heaven and the people that were bad will burn in hell in fire and brimstone for eternity. And I fucking had nightmares forever because of that. And, yeah, a part of me feels like that's child abuse in a way. Forcing a child to be molded to some expectation of society or to some expectation of religious dogma. I understand what Terrence McKenna means when he says culture is not your friend, and I think this is a prime example of that. You know, you have tribes in Africa that will mutilate a girl's genital, I guess to repress sexual desire or something like that. I guess I'm not too familiar with it, so I shouldn't talk. But I mean, fuck, we do it in America too. I bet most of you guys listening have the tip of your dick chopped off because of some biblical dogma passed down from the Middle East. Why are they chopping our tops of our dicks off for? That's a part of my body. You don't need to take the top skin of my dick off when I'm a baby. The first thing I shoot out of a vagina portal into some crazy white room full of lights and metal and doctors wearing huge goggles, and the first thing they do is chop my dick off. Jesus. No pun intended. Yeah, I feel like it's child abuse in a way. Because it's brainwashing, and it gives children nightmares, and they grow up like the kids in the Westboro Baptist Church. They grow up saying God hates fags. What is that noise? An ambulance? Jeez, that would suck to get hurt out here. I don't know. If anything in the Bible is real, it's kind of scary. Even if Jesus was walking on water. You know, there's a story. I forgot where I heard it. But there's a story of someone coming to the Buddha, a devotee coming to a Buddha and saying, like, he wanted to learn how to walk on water to impress his guru, to impress the Buddha. So he spends his whole life doing this austere meditation practice to learn how to walk across water. And 50 years go by. After 50 years of failing, he finally has built up enough city, enough spiritual power to walk across the water to the island. And his guru comes to him and he's excited to show his guru. Guru, look, Guruji, look what I have done. I can now cross the water. And the guru says, that's great, but you know, the ferry is only a nickel. So I don't know what that story means, but take it for what it's worth, which is, I guess, a nickel. What else do we have to talk about? So Envision should be cool. Hopefully I can get my mom on acid or something and ask her some weird questions. I'm going to try to do a podcast with her and maybe ask her some weird questions about my life, like if she thought I was going to be gay or if there was ever any point that she regretted having me. You know, the fun questions like that. You know, I sang a little Allen Ginsberg in my last podcast in the intro. I read an Allen Ginsberg poem. And I've known that Allen Ginsberg was a bit of a pedophile, I guess. Like, he has a poem called, like, Sweet Boy, Give Me Your Ass or something like that. And he was a kind of an outspoken activist on just men and boy relationships, which is, I would kill you, Allen Ginsberg. I know you're dead, but if you touched anyone in my family, young boys in my family, I wouldn't like you anymore, even though your poetry's great. And this brings the question, can you like someone? Can you separate art from the artist? And a part of me, embarrassingly, you know, I'm a little ashamed to admit this, but with Allen Ginsberg, I kind of can. I really appreciate his poetry. And I feel like his poetry was kind of spoke something deeper than any, you know, kind of pedophile thing. And I definitely don't agree with that. But that's so weird, because it's like that Austin Jones kid who was he was supposed to be on Warped Tour, but they kicked him off because he was being a weirdo. I mean, if you've seen those videos of Austin Jones telling like those 12-year-old girls to show him their butthole and stuff like that, like, fuck, dude. That, like, yeah, I could never listen. Not that I thought his music was brilliant, like the poetry of Allen Ginsberg, but I couldn't listen to his music afterwards if I liked it. So I wonder why I give Allen Ginsberg a pass. Allen Ginsberg was a huge part of shifting culture and bringing, you know, some Hindu stuff like Hare Krishna mantras and stuff like that to America. And he also just, I mean, he turned all those guys into poets, Kerouac and all these people, you know, he turned all these beatniks into brilliant writers, all these crazy people. He turned all their lives into stories. But yeah, let me Google something, because he was weird. let me see, Allen Ginsberg, because he was a part of some pedophile club. Allen Ginsberg, pedophile. The North American Man Boy Love Association. Like, what the fuck? The North American Man Boy Love Association is a pedophilia and pederasty advocacy organization in the United States. It works to abolish age of consent laws criminalizing adult sexual involvement with minors and campaigns for the release of men who have been jailed for sexual contact with minors that did not involve coercion. The group no longer holds regular national meetings as of the late 1990s to avoid local police infiltration. The organization has discouraged the formation of local chapters, and around 1995, an undercover detective discovered that there were 1,100 people on the organization's roll. So, I mean, this is a pretty big organization. At least it was in the 90s. And the organization has created pedophile networks such as Dan Pedo, Boy Chat, Annabelle Lee, according to Xavier Von Erich, director of operations at the Anti-Pedophile Organization of Perverted Justice. Yeah, like, fuck that. That's so weird. And I don't agree with that. Despite what kind of free love movements you live through. Oh, how hippie you are. That's not cool to have sex with little kids. And I think he said that. He was like, an old man had sex with me in the backseat of my grandpa's truck or something, and I turned out fine. That's what Allen Ginsberg said. Yeah, I don't know. If you can separate. I mean, I obviously can with that, because my mom bought me this poetry book full of Allen Ginsberg stuff, and it's so inspiring to read. Until I got to like that kind of stuff, like Young Boy Give Me Your Ass or whatever, I don't like to read any of that. It makes me really uncomfortable, because I kind of feel like a young boy still. I mean, I'm in my mid to late 20s, whatever that means. And yeah, I don't know, I feel like a young boy. I don't want no old man Allen Ginsberg with this receding hairline and beard touching me. Did he have a beard towards his old age? I don't know, with your wonky eye. Yeah, I don't know. Do we have anything else interesting to talk about? Oh, yeah. You know, so a lot of you guys always ask me who my favorite poets are, because if you don't know, I write poetry, and there's some of my poetry on YouTube, and I'm going to write a book eventually. I'm working on it now. But some of my favorite poems are actually mostly lyricist, and I wrote a little list, and I wanted to share some of them with you guys. Max Bemis from Say Anything, he's one of my favorite poets. If you've ever listened to Say Anything, read their lyrics while you listen. It's so brilliant. Like, their first couple albums, they wrote them as plays. And this was like in the early 2000s. They're just such a theatrical band and very chauvinistic. And yeah, I think they're the best thing to come out of the MySpace emo scene. I'm sorry that this mic keeps doing that. I have to work with my limited resources here in the jungle. John K. Samson from The Weaker Thans. I love John K. Samson from The Weaker. That's like, The Weaker Thans is like listening to poetry with every song. He was also in a punk rock band called Propagandi. Propagandi. Yeah, check out The Weaker Thans if you guys don't know who The Weaker Thans are. And Joni Mitchell, obviously. Joni Mitchell was one of the reasons I write poetry. Also Tupac. Tupac and Joni Mitchell are some of the biggest reasons I write poetry. Allen Ginsberg, even though he was a pedophile. Jack Kerouac, and pretty much just the whole beatnik generation of poetry was so good. Such a good era of writing and of theater and protest and all that kind of stuff. I want to tell you guys this funny story of, so my friends were in India watching Indiana Jones, the movie. I don't know which one it was. My friends were in India at the movie theater, and in India, the swastika is a positive symbol. It's a Hindu symbol. It's actually a symbol found all over the world, but Hitler kind of took it, rebranded it to the Nazis, and that's kind of the modern day appropriation of that symbol. And if you're American, that's most likely what you identify it with. So Hitler took this Hindu symbol of prosperity or peace or something like this. And so in Indiana Jones, there's a scene where the Nazis are flying through the air. They have like swastikas on the side of it. And the whole theater in India stood up and started cheering because they love the swastika so much. It means so much to them. But by the end of the movie, I'm sure they were terrified. I even saw, when I was in Delhi, I saw a Mein Kampf book with a huge swastika on it. And I was like, these guys probably have no idea that they're just selling a Hitler book because they just think the swastika is such a nice symbol. It's a funny symbol. Or it's not a funny symbol, but a funny story. Frick, you guys. I don't know. What am I doing tomorrow? Oh, yeah, we're going to go. We found some sloths, which was cool. My mom wants to go to this animal sanctuary that's down the street and check it out. Because apparently they have some sloths that they rescued. And it's a good one. I made sure that they don't allow people to exploit them by taking, you know, holding them and that kind of stuff. We're going to support the local animal sanctuary and check out some cute little baby sloths and whatever else they might have. And some other podcasts you guys should check out outside of mine. I love Joe Rogan's podcast, obviously. Theo Vaughn was one of the biggest reasons I started this podcast. Just seeing him work hard, I feel like, I don't know if you guys know who Theo Vaughn is, but you guys check out his podcast. This Past Weekend is what it's called. A lot of you guys said you noticed my inspiration. And yeah, I just want to give a shout out to the Rat King, that Rat Daddy. Thanks for the inspo, baby. And what's another good podcast? Chris D'Elia, even though he threatened to shit on me. I like his podcast. Congratulations. That's what his podcast is called. I like Bill Burr's podcast. I like Raghu Marcus's podcast, Mind Rolling. Check that podcast out. What's another good one? Duncan Trussell. Check out the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. And of course, what's this podcast called again? This Place, A Place for Humans. And of course, A Place for Humans, the best podcast in the universe on Earth. I don't have the best microphone, though. Anyways, I love you guys. Please support the podcast by going over to my Patreon, patreon.com/DakotaWint. It will be in the description. And make sure to go to welcometosummer.land if you want a handmade chilla or bong. And make sure to go get a shirt from Stay Happy, Stay Weird. And make sure to click subscribe. Thank you guys so much. I love you. And let's end this song with some New Brunswick. What's those podcasts? Gosh, guys. Hardly talk. get another one up soon. Enjoy this song. This is by my friend's band, New Brunswick. Peace and love.
I step outside to catch my breath. The bullshit I've been taking in is making me sick.